Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
I know people are tired of hearing this when I get on this show, but I'll admit, this week I'm woefully underprepared. I've been a little busy. I've made some changes in life, and
You're a Pepsi guy instead of a Coke guy? Is that what the
something like that, I guess you could say.
deal is?
If you mean I'm a Pepsi guy by I quit my shoot job, that would be one of the things I would do. So yeah, I did that, and I've been doing some other things, and I've been going through some life flux. So I've been a little behind on watching some of the things that I should have. I've been a little behind on the stardom, which has given me great joy recently, and I look forward to seeing some stardom again here very soon. In fact, I have. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of things here real soon because it looks like I'm going to have the time.
You're for the first time in, I feel like, many years. Who knows how long this will last, but we're on the same time schedule, and I don't mean the same time zone. You are in the Eastern time zone, I'm in the Central time zone, but we are awake roughly around the same time every day now, which is a change.
I have lived a lot of lives in the span of this podcast,
That you have. You
I
we both have, but you far more even than I. Many different time schedules, many different phases of your brain, I guess we
endeavors?
could say.
Yeah,
And I don't mean that in any way as an insult. Longtime listeners of this podcast will know what I'm talking about. Many different iterations of other podcasts that you've been doing, which you'll have another one to tell the people about if they're not already aware of that. A little bit later on in the show, we'll tell the people about that. Yes, you've lived many lives, Mike Sempervivi.
would you consider that wrestling news?
I would say that's wrestling adjacent news.
So, I don't know where life is going to take me here, but you know what? For right now, I should have a lot more time to concentrate on things like the wrestling news, like the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, but most importantly, I'll be able to check some things out and be on a more normal schedule to see a lot more things happening in Japan, because there are things happening in Japan. If you only watch New Japan, you may not necessarily know that, but there are things happening all over
Yeah.
the country, and we are going to cover some of them right here today.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say we're going to spend a ton of time talking about New Japan because, quite honestly, I'm not all that hyped for this upcoming Burning Spirit tour. I don't know that you, Mike, even with all your newfound time, are going to sit down and watch every single match of the televised portion of this tour, which gets underway as we record this Thursday evening in just a few hours, early Friday morning. This tour will get underway at the Yokohama Budokan, September 2nd, 2022. We're not going to run down all these cards for these many shows because, quite honestly, there's not a whole lot there, a lot of untelevised shows, and for fairly good reason. But just we'll run down the opening show of this tour just to give an idea kind of what you're going to be seeing, because it's really variations of all this with not much until you get to the very end of the tour. Opening night, DKC versus Kosei Fujita, DKC replacing Alex Coghlan, who was announced for the tour, even though it was known that he had a leg injury, which was just strange. And he had to chime in on Twitter and say, "Hey, don't know why this is up here, but I'm still hurt. I'm not going to be over there." So the DKC is the beneficiary. He gets another tour of Japan
It's
after
almost
his
like they have a
brief.
reputation of that.
What's that?
It's almost like they have a reputation for that.
Yeah, it hasn't it's not the first time that's happened as of late. So yeah, something to keep an eye out for going forward. Match two, something that firmly in the if I didn't do this podcast, there's no way I'd watch a category is it's Goto, Yoshihashi, Yo, and Ryohei Oiwa. No problem with that team. But they are taking on the group, the foursome. That is the House of Torture with Evil, Yujiro, Sho, and Dick Togo. This is leading into the never open weight six man tag team title match that'll be happening later on in the tour. Ryusuke Taguchi, Master Wato, and Jado, a natural tag team if there ever was one, taking on TJP, Francesco Akira, and I guess an honorary member of the United Empire, the leader of the Legion in Rev Pro, Gideon Gray, is on this tour.
I didn't expect you to stop right there for a reaction out of me, but yeah,
I was waiting to see how excited you were about seeing Gideon Gray and Jado opposite each other. So that's where we're at, three matches into this opener. It's not like Yokohama Budokan is a tiny building. It's not huge, but other promotions run major shows here. That's not what's happening with New Japan. We've got the Great Okan, Jeff Cobb, and Aaron Henare against Bad Luck Fale, Chase Owens, and Gato. So we're four matches in. The only match I have any interest in seeing out of these four is the opener with DKC against Kosei Fujita. And as I always say, making that comparison to after a hockey game or an NHL coach talks about how their fourth line was their best line, if your young Lions are your most interesting match, that's more of a statement on how uninteresting the rest of your card is versus, you know, how lights out great the Young Lion match is going to be, even though it will be fine and it'll probably be the best thing, at least on the early part of the show. We then have Togi Makabe, Tomoaki Homa, and Kushida taking on Kenta, Hikuleo, and Taiji Ishimori.
Oh, grit
Mike,
versus jam right there.
Are you at a point five matches in where you're thinking, damn it, I'm just going to pull an all-nighter, stay up after the excitement of doing this podcast and watch this whole show from start to finish live?
The grit and jam, you know, when you talk about that fourth line, here you go in this match here. The problem with all of this, and as we get to the next match, which on paper, you know, who can complain about Naito and Sonata and Hiromu Takahashi and Bushi against Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, Desperado, and Kanemaru? Going to be a great match. It's going to be a good match.
It's going to be a good match.
Yeah.
Let's maintain some standards here on the podcast.
It should be good, but as you then go through and the next night, guess what's on there?
The same, yeah.
And they're the repetition of all of these cards. And before the show, I was bitching and moaning like, okay, until you get to October, there's really nothing to see. And that's not true because there's obviously the show on the 25th, as well as some things sprinkled throughout these shows like Minoru Suzuki.
It's pretty close to true, though, Mike. Don't give yourself too much of a hard time.
You look at Corican Hall, and it's like, boy, I'm looking forward to Minoru Suzuki and Bad Dude Tito starting off that show. And then, yeah, Okada and Tanahashi and against Jonah and Shane Haste in the main event. That's cool, but like, how many times are you going to have a combination of Okada and Tanahashi and somebody in the main event? And I know that's what this tour is all about, you know, with Haste and Jonah and Tito and all those guys. But it's like, there's not much here that is going to draw me in and makes me want to watch every single night of the show. Now, again, we could be dead wrong about this. We're going to go through and we're going to watch a whole lot of it. So I'm open to being wrong. Maybe there's going to be some surprises on here, but this, unfortunately, it's names on paper on a tour that's going to happen. And you know, we'll see you on the 25th, you know, yeah, that's unfortunately, there's nothing here for me. That's jacking me up here. I'm sorry.
No, we've got the main event on the opening night with Okada, Tanahashi, and Yano against Jonah, Shane, Hayes, and Bad Dude Tito. Really, the only thing about this tournament that's interesting is the two shows at Corican Hall, the 5th and the 6th, that are half capacity, which shouldn't be a problem considering for non-G1 shows, they're only drawing, you know, around 500-600 people maybe anyway at Corican Hall. But half capacity shows that are sold out, so I guess around 800-900 people with crowd cheering allowed. So that will be exciting to hear crowds cheer.
Yes, absolutely.
That is really almost the only excitement about these shows. The 5th, like you said, Minoru Suzuki versus Bad Dude Tito, the opener again, is the match I'm most excited about on the show. Really the only other match of any note is the main event, Okada and Tanahashi against Jonah and Shane Haste, which should be very good. We've got a similar card the following night You've got basically the six man from Yokohama with Okada, Tanahashi, and Yano against Jonas, Shane Hayes, and Bad Dude Tito. That'll be taking place again as the semi-main on September 6th. And then Shingo and Hiromu Takahashi against Kenta and El Fantasmo is the main event on the 6th, again with crowd cheering. We should note there's no live English language commentary for any of these shows, to the best of my knowledge. I don't think until the Declaration of Power show in October, there will be video on demand English language commentary that I assume will be pretty quickly forthcoming, I would imagine, particularly for that first night at Korakuen Hall, the first night with cheering fans, that they would want English language commentary for that show up pretty quickly. We should note that, again, as we talked about earlier in the year, how outside of New Japan Cup and the G1, the Samurai TV shows this year are not live on New Japan World, and that is the case again on the 6th, so the second night in a row where there will be fans cheering. That, as of now, is not listed on the live schedule for New Japan World. It's listed as video on demand only. So that's, you know, another thing that, you know, one of the few things that would be kind of worth getting excited about if you want to stay up late, that is not going to be available live. And also, the Yuji Nagata annual anniversary show in Togane Arena, that is also a Samurai TV show that will be video on demand for New Japan World, not live, with Yuji Nagata and Great O'Khan in a singles match as the main event, which actually should be really fun.
What is it with all the older guys wanting Great O'Khan to be involved in their matches? Did they see what was going on in Vegas and say, I need to feed off that energy, or what? My God.
Well, we know Muto's history and business/money is a bit checkered, so maybe that's why he sent the Great Muta to team with the Great O'Khan. Bring back some casino winnings. That'll be taking place. We'll touch on that a little bit later. That'll be taking place in Osaka for Pro Wrestling Noah.
Well, let me ask.
Yeah, I mean, outside of that, you look up and down this tour. Like I said, a lot of untelevised shows. Then the next televised show live on New Japan World, the 18th. We've got Never Open Weight Six Man Tag Team Titles, Hiroki Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo. It's Evil, Yujiro, and Sho. I can't fathom caring about that. I love the idea of Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo as the six-man tag team champions, but you know exactly what that's going to be, and it's not going to be anything other than that. Then an elimination match in the main event with Tanahashi, Tama Tonga, Toru Yano, Kushida, and Jado against Jay White, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Taiji Ishimori, and Gato. That brings us to the 23rd, a New Japan World show with another elimination tag main event, which it's not going to be anything, you know, mind-blowing, but it should be fun at least. David Finlay, Ryusuke Taguchi, Master Wato, and DKC against the United Empire of Will Ospreay, Aaron Hanare, TJP, and Francesco Akira. And then the final night of the tour, Kobe World Memorial Hall. The last three matches, the main matches on the show. Francesco Akira and TJP defending the junior heavyweight tag titles against Taguchi and Wato. Carl Anderson, don't be sad, don't feel bad about yourself if you forgot that he's the Never Open Weight champion, because I was convinced up until a week or two ago that so had New Japan Pro Wrestling. Carl Anderson defends against Hiroshi Tanahashi. And the match that I think is pretty obviously going to be the best match of the tour, Will Ospreay, David Finlay, IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship. I guess the only other match on this tour that could potentially contend for the best match going, also on this show, Toru Yano and Doc Gallows. Get excited.
There was a note on the website that Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows' Impact contracts had come to an end in Dave apparently noted at some point that when they signed with Impact Wrestling, it was the biggest contracts to date that Impact had. And now that they were free and clear from Impact, they could sign and show up anywhere. In theory, it could be AEW. It could be WWE. And I thought to myself, oh, I can think of a few reasons why it wouldn't be WWE. I mean, that last re-signing they had there didn't go all that, you know, all that well. And then I'm thinking, you know, if I'm Carl Anderson and I got Hiroshi Tanahashi, you know, down the barrel of my gun, I think I'll be good with whatever New Japan decides to do with me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I could
Where
see it
else
either
are
way.
Either
from
one
his
of those guys.
From him and Gallo's perspective, I mean, if someone is willing to pay me exponentially more than I'm worth, I take that.
But nobody's going to love you like
really
New Japan.
I'm sorry, what?
Nobody's going to love you the way that New Japan loves those guys.
Yeah, but that didn't stop them from signing for big money elsewhere before.
Yeah.
And we know WWE is sniffing around New Japan right now. They're really hot at trying to get Jonah. And, you know, the great booking genius that is Triple H, which that just cracks me up. Like, the lowest possible bar to clear. Don't be senile, Vince McMahon. Okay, well, you're doing a great job, Paul. I mean, his really only idea seems to be, let's bring somebody back every week. And so, I mean, that would be another guy or another group to bring back. I'm perfectly fine with that. Like, keep signing guys that I have no interest in seeing. Keep them out of the promotions that I watch. Totally fine with that.
So you're very critical here. You haven't come along yet here to this new Paul Levesque era, but
it's
swear there have been
changes. Same thing. I don't care if a theory is named Austin or if you tweet wrestling lowercase on a Thursday afternoon. It still feels like WWE. It still has the same verbiage. Outside of a few things here or there, it still has Kevin Dunn telling them to shake the cameras around. I don't care. I don't need WWE. I don't care what changes they make. I have so much other wrestling to watch that doesn't really frustrate me.
You're just upset because you had Dakota Kai and Io Shirai like the rest of us penciled into our fantasy stardom bookings, and damned if he didn't take back over and then they show back up again. Because I thought Shirai,
I thought
both of them were out of there, and then that obviously doesn't end up happening. But it's going to be.
I don't know who's Io Shirai, by the way. I've never heard of her. I've heard of this
Io Sky, but
yeah. Let's all give Triple H credit for giving Austin Theory and Matt Riddle their first names back and ignore the absolute idiocy of calling Io Shirai Io Sky after she's been in the company for, what, 4 years now, however long it's been?
I don't know. I know you're right. When it comes to all this stuff, it's just nonsense.
Like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to rant on this too much, but I just can't fathom having low enough standards for change in pro wrestling if I'm dissatisfied with a product, that the few changes that have happened in WWE, if you could even call them changes, as far as to the product, that it's like, oh my God, I did not like this product. It's garbage. And now I'm back.
Well, I think that's just
Riddle.
You know what that is, though. That's just the internet being the internet, where people take, you know, the smallest little, you know, bit of rope, and then all of a sudden they're swinging it around like they're fucking cowboys. But we lived through some.
There's like 300,000 more people that are watching it every week. Now, we're not doing this podcast on this podcast, so we'll get off this.
No, we're not. But we did live through some horrible times in New Japan, and I will say any positive progress and momentum is okay. That's a good thing. But the whole thing, at the bottom line, at the end of the day, it's still WWE. So it still is what it is.
Let's not act like it's like they're going out there and putting on like 1984 Mid-South level shows, or they're doing the Super J Cup every week. Come on.
That is true.
Like, it's not like all of a sudden Triple H took over and we're getting Misawa Kawada at the Budokan. Like, I'm sorry. It's not. But I digress.
Just give me Saray back, please.
This is a show to complain about New Japan right now, damn it.
Well, give me Mako Satomura winning and Saray back. But, New Japan, again, bottom line is with this tour, and we can get off of this, is, again, there's a lot of repetition on it. It is not awful. You look at some of the tag matches, and it's like, okay, that's cool. But I also, you know, you said there's going to be no English language commentary, and I wonder.
Not live.
We're so inside the bubble. That doesn't affect us whatsoever. For most of the people listening, it may not. But is that a sign for people to go, okay, you don't necessarily have to watch this one?
I don't think so. I mean, we're not in the scenario yet where they've been sending Kevin Kelly over to do English language commentary for, you know, full tours outside of
tournaments.
And we might be at a point where, based on the clearly significantly decreased interest in New Japan Pro Wrestling from Western fans, I mean, maybe that's going to be the new normal, pandemic aside, is that, you know, he gets brought in for the big tournaments. Maybe he gets brought in live to do the October 10th show at Sumo Hall. Maybe that ends up just being called remote. I don't know, but I mean, there's no reason to do that at this point, to have him on these shows.
Here's my thing is, does it subconsciously, or does it psychologically tell people, okay, if we're not getting live English language commentary as it's going on, the show means a little bit less, or that puts it in people's 100%. Minds. And that's my thing, is it doesn't, he could be in Florida, you know, with the Mets game on one TV while he's calling the action, you know, that doesn't matter where he's at to
which
me.
They it's did just, for the last couple of years. So yeah, it's not like they can't do that.
Exactly. And that's why I wonder, and again, because it doesn't matter, and maybe I'm on the outside, I'm curious as to if that subconsciously sends the message to fans, okay, it's not as big of a show if he's not
100%.
Going to be there. So
I don't think there's any question about that. And I think for most English language fans, English speaking fans, I should say, of New Japan Pro Wrestling, again, outside of the bubble of people that listen to this podcast, people that subscribe to The Observer, people that are extremely online on Twitter, I think that it does tell people, well, you can wait for Royal Quest, or you can wait for, you know, Declaration of Power on October 10th, where I would imagine one way or the other, whether Kevin Kelly is there in person at Sumo Hall or is calling it remotely from his home, that they will, you know, they will have live English language commentary for that. But yeah, I mean, even looking at the Declaration of Power show, we've got the two big matches announced for that so far are Kazuchika Okada against Jonah in a rematch from their G1 match, the great moment where Jonah, to the roars of the crowd, hit the big splash off the top, got the win over Okada. We've got that rematch here. It's not for the rights to challenge for the IWGP world title in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. They're not doing that this year. There is no rights certificate defenses happening. It's just Okada versus Jonah in a rematch, which kind of makes it even more of a foregone conclusion than it already was. Like, there's zero chance that Okada isn't winning that match. And then the World Heavyweight title match is Jay White against Tama Tonga. And, you know, we said it last time on the podcast, you know, Tama Tonga had a good G1. He's far better in terms of as a single. He's far better as a babyface than as a heel. And they are dead set on making Tama Tonga a thing as a main eventer. But he still is Tama Tonga, and it's not necessarily even a slight on him as a wrestler. Like, he's just at a certain level. He's been at a certain level. And when all of this is tied into going on to be in the main event of the Tokyo Dome, it's beyond a foregone conclusion that Jay White is defeating Tama Tonga here. There's zero chance that Tama Tonga is going to win. And I guess that's part of my bigger point. It's something that I'm in the process of writing about for, yes, finally, there will be a new edition of Three Count Fall tomorrow coming out. And one of the things I'm writing about is just how New Japan at this point, and granted, it's not like this hasn't been the case to some degree in certain years, but more so than ever, New Japan is a promotion right now where there are specific periods where it's worth following closely and necessary to follow very closely. Wrestle Kingdom, New Japan Cup, Best of the Super Junior, G1. Outside of those, there's really not a whole lot of reason to pay all that close attention, because either it's things that aren't that important, or in the case of the matches here that have been announced for October 10th, it's matches that you 100% know the outcome. And predictable booking is fine to an extent when it's with exciting characters and or new people on the rise. But when it's just shuffling the deck of the same guys that have been doing this for the last 10 years, and what they're going to be doing is just achieving the same thing they've already achieved, whether it's winning another G1 or winning another IWGP title, it's hard to get excited. I've talked about it before. For me, my excitement level for New Japan, it's not going to be at the level it had been in previous years until we start to see the likes of Shota Umino, Ren Narita, Yuya Uemura, Yoda Tsuji, those guys coming back, finding their way into the main event scene and going on that journey, going on their first run to win a big tournament, win a major championship. Like, those are the stories that we need to have told. And instead, it's the same stories over and over again with the same booker that's telling those same stories in pretty much the exact same way.
Yeah, of the names you mentioned, unfortunately. Okay, which one's going to end up in Bullet Club? Which one's going to end up in House of Torture? And that's one of the things leading into this Jay White Tama Tonga match is, number one, when you look at the matches leading into that match, where are Tama Tonga? Where is Jay White? They're not there. They're not on these shows.
Yeah.
Why not? How are you going to build this story up? How are we going to get any intrigue here? So they're going to have to do that. And in a way, I'm very interested in that because we all know Tama Tonga is not going to win, because here's the thing. If he does, you didn't do anything. All you did was beat Jay White and he just hotshotted the belt so Okada can win it or whatever weird thing you're going to do.
Well, that's not going to happen.
And that's not going to happen.
Jay White and Tama Tonga at a single night Wrestle Kingdom?
Of course.
Hell no. The only potential wrinkle in this whole title scenario of it being anything other than Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada, and I think even this is like a 5-10% likelihood, is if somehow Naito. Storyline-wise, pulls a rabbit out of his hat in November and gets a title shot against Jay White and wins against Jay White and goes on to wrestle Okada in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. But I don't see that happening because I don't think they would have had Jay White beat Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP World title in the 50th anniversary year of New Japan unless that whole story was going to be wrapped up at Wrestle Kingdom 17 by Okada defeating Jay White to win the title back. Most likely, I would say, by the way, in a show that's semi-main evented, and really, I would say the real main event of the show with Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega.
And God bless the natives, but let's be real honest here. What is New Japan and Antonio Inoki known for? You know, conquering the outsider, you know, coming in, conquering style, conquering, you know, bringing up the company against the entire rest of the fighting world. So yeah. Okada and Jay White only make sense. And again, I have a little intrigue that way because there's no way they're going to flip the belt on to Tama Tonga. And at that point, it's like, well, okay, well, how, what are you going to do during that match other than we get a couple of close near falls that make me think anything's going to happen? And Okada and Jonah's cool. It's exactly what I want. I think Okada's going to win. It's not
going to
hurt
of
Jonah.
Of course he's going to.
You know,
and
Okada
it's
gets
the match
the win
they
back.
Should make, but it just, in a vacuum, it's fine. But everything in New Japan right now is so goddamn predictable. And it's not just predictable, but it's, again, it's predictable with all the same guys going on the same journeys they've gone on for the last decade.
Well, Adam, let me ask you this, because obviously, you know, all those names that we want to see get planted into the mid-card more and come back and you know, develop and start sprouting up so we can knock off, you know, again, there's the Chase Owens, the guys who have been there a long time, the folks that have been there a long time that we'd like to see move to the side. If you get two, let's just say two, because it may be too much to ask for three, although we could get a tag team, FTR, and two other, you know, people to come over for that show, then does that change the dynamic of that? Because is there a real world tag league this year? At some point, FTR is going to have to make their way over to Japan unless they're going to drop the belts during a strong taping, which I absolutely positively can't believe.
Yeah, or on a show like the, not a strong taping, but the New York pay-per-view or something like that. No, I think they'll go to Japan. I don't know if they'll be gone for the entirety of World Tag League. But yeah, I mean, if you're talking about Wrestle Kingdom and who's going to be on there.
But for this declaration
sure
show.
Seems, particularly after last night at Dynamite and the angle they shot with Omega and Ospreay. I mean, I can't fathom it's not going to be Omega Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom. You'd have to figure probably Adam. Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. at Wrestle Kingdom, and most likely some sort of, I would imagine, probably 3 or 4 way tag team title match with FTR.
Yeah, surely, but I'm asking for declaration of power. I'm asking for declaration of power because for Wrestle Kingdom, surely they're going to be over there. But that's when, if you're looking at this show now with Okada and Jonah and Jay White and Tonga, do you believe that you could see 2 to 3? Because that will now change everything for me if we do get an announcement that people are going to be coming over. Because obviously we're not going to get Omega and Ospreay. We may not get that at all anytime soon, just depending on some things. And if we do, that's a dome show match. Of course, it's not going to happen in Sumo Hall. But we could get Claudio Wheeler and Brian Danielson against 3 people while FTR also comes over to have a match. And again, that is a pipe dream sort of thing, but I think if names are brought over of any kind, again, as long as they have some impact, then does that change that October 10th show?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, if you're asking me if I'd rather see a show filled with, you know, the Chase Owens and Bad Luck Follies of the world, or having Brian Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli and FTR on the show, I think the answer to that is pretty clear. The issue to me is, if those are the only ways that your shows are really exciting at this point, that's a problem. Because right now, looking at New Japan as it is, outside of the excitement of a G1 final or just it's Wrestle Kingdom season, the areas of excitement are things that aren't sort of normal New Japan. That being, you know, do some AEW guys come over? You know, the excitement of the November 20th joint show with Stardom. Do they eventually get back around to doing something with Pro Wrestling Noah? All those things are great, and I'm excited about any of them if and when they happen. Obviously, the Stardom show is happening. But none of those shows change the nuts and bolts day in, day out of what the booking is for New Japan shows right now. And even to your point of, you know, I'm going to kind of counter myself even here, talking about how, yes, I'm very excited for when Umino and Yota Tsuji and Ren Narita and Yuya Uemura in particular get back. But like you said, where are those guys going to be slotted? What is the product at that point? We're already seeing, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, that the product has only gone further and further down the line of more and more wrestlers having matches that have screwy finishes, wacky finishes, wrenches, lights being flicked on and off, you know, all that sort of stuff, all the different ways of ref interference, ref distractions, ref incompetence. That stuff's not going away as long as the regime stays the same. So even the idea of these guys that are the future of the company, you know, coming back and really taking their spots, even the excitement for that is a little bit muted by knowing that, like, it's a very narrow band of what New Japan shows feel like, and it doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. So I don't know. Unless you have any other New Japan thoughts, let's get off of that and talk about some other stuff.
No, nope. And because you know what's there, the TJPs, the Akiras, you know, Hinari, there's hope already there. There's a lot of hope that could be there. And it's much like WWE, New Japan is always the easiest fix because you have talent and loads and layers of it. You are blessed with that no matter your incompetence. So it doesn't take much to turn the wheel. But again,
the more you get out of the way, the better it'll be.
Yeah.
But that's all dependent on a booker checking their ego at the door. And that is not something that I feel like we have in great supply right now, unfortunately, in New Japan.
Or some other places for that matter, but we'll move on to some other places, and I don't know which way you want to take this. I would assume to the green, Matt, but which way do you want to take this?
Yeah, briefly. We don't have to spend a ton of time on it, because I want to get into Stardom before we end the show, and I want to spend a good deal of time talking about that. But if you're like me, and you're frustrated with just what New Japan is right now, and again, it's not like it's news that there's a lot of interference, there's a lot of ref bumps, there's a lot of ref distractions, but just that you've been watching this for so many years now, and it's happening more and more and more on every show, and the G1 was infected with that sort of thing much more than I think, you know, would have liked to have seen. The N1 Victory Tournament in Pro Wrestling Noah is, for better or worse, and I would say better, but it is the complete opposite of what New Japan is right now. You have had 0 ref bumps, 0 weapon shots, 0 ref incompetence. It's just, for the most part, badass wrestlers going out and having badass matches. You can quibble with the booking here and there, and I am utterly fascinated by how the final this coming weekend, this coming Saturday, is going to play out. We'll get to that in a minute. But the action in this tournament has been as straightforward, hard-hitting, bare bones, no bullshit professional wrestling as you're ever going to find. And while to date there hasn't been anything in the tournament that, you know, got to the level of just incredible dynamic pro wrestling like Okada and Ospreay, which again I think is going to be very, very difficult to unseat as match of the year, there have been great matches up and down this tournament. Really good finishes throughout the tournament in terms of some matches going really long, some matches going to the time limit, some matches being short. You have matches that aren't being won with finishers. You've got some upsets. There's a core group of guys, you know, whether it's, Masato Tanaka, Masakatsu Funaki, Hideki Suzuki, Masaki Mochizuki, Kaito Kiyomiya, Kenno, Sugiura, Kojima, even Kaz Fujita, Go Shiozaki, you can go up and down the line, that night in and night out, for the most part, are having great matches with each other. Dr. Wagner, Iota Dr. Wagner Jr., like, he's fine. I think he's been better than I expect in this tournament. Jack Morris, I don't know how much you've seen of him in this tournament, Mike, but like, he's, for, in terms of Japanese wrestling, like, he's a guy. He's, I look at him and I fine. Think that's a guy that needs to get signed by WWE right away because he fits their bill so much better than wrestling and pro wrestling Noah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll give it to him. I mean, he's fine in that land of other men.
He's just so interchangeable. Like, yes, I don't have a problem with him. He's not bad, and I'm not trying to bag on the guy. If you're listening, Jack, you did all right in this tournament. But
I see him,
It just feels like every guy that's debuted and gone on to be pretty good in wrestling for the last 15 years.
Yes. There's going to be something that he needs to stand out.
He's jacked. He's got mid-range dark hair. He's got a beard. He wears mid-range short trunks, and he does a lot of Seth Rollins type moves.
Well, that's but
which is fine. But it just, I just feel like I've seen enough of that.
Hey, look, Hideki Suzuki coming back after his whatever stint in NXT.
Yeah, his 2 years in WWE as a coach / member in the last couple of months of whatever. What was Stokely's group called? It wasn't Catch Point. What did they call it?
Diamond Mine.
Diamond Mine.
Yes, his name is Hachimura.
When I hear that, I'm thinking of Diamond Dallas Page interview segments from 1991. But that was not, sadly, what the Diamond Mine was.
Bang.
Yeah, he's been great in this tournament, but he in particular, that tournament final. So in case you're not aware, the tournament final coming up this Saturday, it's Kaito Kiyomiya and Hideki Suzuki. It's going to be a great match. Hideki Suzuki has been awesome in this tournament. If you haven't seen the match that he had, the 30-minute draw with Kenno at Korakuen Hall on the 19th, that alone, much less the Wrestless Tournament, which has had good to great matches every night, but that alone is worth whatever the subscription cost is for Wrestle Universe to go and watch that match. If that had had a finish, if it was not a time limit draw, I would have put that above Okada and Ospreay for my taste in pro wrestling. I just thought it was a fantastic, riveting match. So Suzuki's been great. Kaito Kiyomiya is awesome right now. We've talked about it before. He is the guy that they need to build around. They've tried everything else, and all it's meant is basically they draw around 500 fans no matter where they go, or they draw a couple thousand at Sumo Hall or at Budokan. He's the guy they need to try to build around. They should have been doing it before. We talked about all the Muto booking, everything, whatever. They finally had him beat Keiji Muto. Too little, too late, but it happened. He needs to win this tournament. Hideki Suzuki, in pro wrestling, Noah, has never lost to a non-shooter. I believe the only guys he's lost to in pro wrestling, Noah, if my research was correct, are Kaz Fujita and Masakatsu Funaki. He's gone to time limit draws with the likes of Kenno, or I believe like the likes of Goshi Ozaki, Katsuhiko Nakajima, but he never loses to any of those guys. So to me, like this, we've talked about different matches before, but this is the match that is going to tell everything you need to know about, you know, if the reports that Dave and others have had that, you know, the split in terms of, and I don't mean split as far as like guys not getting along, but the split in terms of booking in Noah right now is that, that Nosawa Rangai largely sticks to the junior heavyweight division as far as booking, and Kendo Kashin is largely booking the heavyweight division. This is going to tell you everything you need to know one way or the other about what Kendo Kashin's Pro Wrestling Noah heavyweight division is going to be and what the vision for the company is going forward. Because as much as I love Hideki Suzuki, my type of wrestler, he's been great in this tournament, there is not a single argument that can be made that Hideki Suzuki should beat Kaito Kiyomiya to win this tournament. Kiyomiya needs to beat Suzuki. He needs to go on and beat Kenno for the title, and he needs to go on and have a long, spectacular run wrestling guys from Noah, having Noah and Cyberfight as a whole leverage every relationship they have to bring in guys from other promotions to lose from him or to lose to him in his title reign. That's the only right answer here. It's very clear, but I have 100%, not 100%, that's what's going to happen.
What if Kiyomiya wins, but Suzuki basically kicks the shit out of him the whole time? Does that matter? Let me just flat out ask you: is there a way Kiyomiya can win this thing, but they are still going to want to quote unquote protect Suzuki along the way, and he is made to look monster through this whole thing? Is there any way that Kiyomiya could come out of a win looking bad? Is basically what I'm asking you.
I would hope not, and I don't. It's not Kaz Fujita. If this final was Fujita and Kiyomiya, I would 100% say yes, that would happen.
Fujita, by the way, for anybody that's been unaware in this thing, during the blocks, Fujita did beat Kenno. So don't worry, Fujita's still going to be in the mix.
Yeah, no, he beat Kenno.
Ironhead forever.
He did have a couple losses that I wasn't expecting, but they're all, yeah, he pretty much yet again, he beat Kenno and he beat him convincingly. It maybe wasn't quite as much of a squash. Went 19 minutes. It wasn't as much of a squash as when Fujita murdered Kenno for the national title. I believe it was last year in 2020. But I don't think so. But again, the other thing that I just keep having gnawing at me in the back of my mind too about this final is that Suzuki went 30 minutes. He went to a 30-minute draw with Kenno.
He did.
That leads me to believe as well that Suzuki's going to win here and then have a title match with Kenno, which in a vacuum will be great because they had one of the best matches of 2022 just a week or two ago. But if Pro Wrestling Noah has any desire, and maybe they don't, maybe Cyberfight doesn't, maybe ABEMA doesn't, but if they have any desire for them to be anything other than what they are, which is a promotion that draws 500 or 600 people in buildings that are much bigger than that, and a promotion that has major league production values but minor league attendance, if they have any desire to at some point ever be more than that, the only correct answer is building around Kaito Kiyomiya. Because God love him. Like, I love Hideki Suzuki. Kaz Fujita is, you know, he is what he is. All these guys, none of those guys are going to bring them to any sort of prominence at all. We've seen that over the last couple of years. Not even Keiji Muto could do it. So try building around Kiyomiya. Like, it's staring them right in the face. And I'm just fascinated going into this match because I have no idea how it's going to go. Like, I know how it should go, but I also have in my mind, based on the last 3 years of the promotion, pretty clearly how it seems like it'll go. And I guess we'll just have to wait until Saturday to see.
I like Hideki Suzuki a lot, too. I mean, we always talked about how he just looks like an old-school throwback pro wrestler, and he fits that role perfectly.
Last trainee of Billy Robinson, and he 100% fits the bill.
Absolutely. And the thing is, though, Kiyomiya and Kenno is what I would want. And there's another way to look at this, which is Kiyomiya defeats Suzuki, but if Suzuki somehow gets his hands on Keno first and Suzuki wins the title, it's like, well, okay, then you still have a natural match with Kiyomiya, but we'll see how the final is. I don't know if I want to see that as much as I'd like to see Kiyomiya and Kenta, as opposed to Kiyomiya continuing to chase, which is what would happen if Suzuki's able to topple Keno on the way to that. And it does keep Kiyomiya chasing if you want to look at it that way. But another way to look at a lot of this is, how much does Kashin go to the Muto playbook as a booker? Because who has he come up with the whole time at his hip the entire time? That's who he's learned from. So it's going to be interesting to see, pulling back from the past, what exactly he pulls out here for some of this.
100%. And also, you would think with his background, a guy like Hideki Suzuki is the guy who, you know, he would favor over Kaito Kiyomiya. But all the reports that, you know, that Kashin is more interested in pushing the younger guys and the older guys, it's easy to say this is when, you know, when the rubber hits the road. And, like, again, I have no problem. Let's say Kiyomiya beats Suzuki here. Kiyomiya goes on and has 7, 8, 9 great defenses. You know, they bring in Suwama from All Japan, and Kiyomiya beats him. Kenta, as you said, comes in and Kiyomiya beats him. And then down the line, Kiyomiya loses the title to Hideki Suzuki. No problem. Love it. Love Hideki Suzuki. But the way the last 3-4 years have gone with Kiyomiya, and then the way this tournament went with him losing the first couple matches and then going on this big winning streak to get into the final, he has to win. If you ever want the fans to trust being able to buy into him as being the guy, you have to make him the guy, and now is the time. They've already botched it 2 or 3 times. Now is the time, and as a wrestler, he is 100% ready, which maybe 2-3 years ago you couldn't say. Right now, if you've watched his performances in this tournament, you watch the match that he was somehow able to pull out of 2022 Keiji Muto a couple months back, he is ready to be the guy. So do it. Let's see what they can do. Let's see what can happen.
Yoshinari Ogawa is still a champion in 2022. As we talk about championships and controversy and things like that, I guess there's really no controversy, but it always just kind of makes me laugh a little bit, because on paper, you know, it's like Chris Ridgeway and Yoshinori Ogawa. Just, it's not like peanut butter and jelly there, but they're a fine team. And Aita and Kotaro Suzuki, again, to see Kotaro Suzuki's name in the mix, it's a trip. And this is an interesting show. I love the eight man. I adore the eight man. And I know a lot of attention, obviously, is going to the Great Muta and the semi-main event six-man, but the junior tag team title match and the eight-man, I love this. You know, I really do, and it's a 10-match
show. Well, the
eight-man,
just to lay it out there for people, it's Naomichi Marufuji, Goshi Ozaki, Masato Tanaka, and Masashi Mochizuki against Kaz Fujita, Kendo Kashin, Iho de Dr. Wagner Jr., and Timothy Thatcher.
I love that.
It'll be some wackiness with Kashin. But it'll be good. It'll be good stuff. The thing you mentioned, controversy. There may not be controversy with Yoshinari Ogawa being a champion in the junior heavyweight division. What there is controversy with is Katsuhiko Nakajima, Mike.
Yeah.
I will preface all of this by saying I love Katsuhiko Nakajima. I've been in the tank for him since he was a 15-year-old and came on the scene and looked like a top 10 wrestler in the world. No exaggeration.
Broke Christopher Daniels' arm. Always trips me out as he remember that.
Yes, but outside of that, a guy who just execution, precision, everything, movement, just so beyond his years. Me and Jeremy Deemer on the bonus feed for Wrestling at Random, which this episode just actually went up today on our Patreon, we had a listener request for Differ Cup 2005, the final night of that. And one of the matches that the listener wanted us to watch was Katsuhiko Nakajima against Asamu Namaguchi, a blast from the past, a former 0-1 young guy. But I believe Nakajima was like 16 or 17 years old in that match, and he looked like like the best wrestler in the world. So I'm just prefacing everything I'm about to say by saying Nakajima was and continues to be one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. But if I'm Pro Wrestling Noah, I'm not putting him in the ring with anyone that I have any plans for. You go back to a couple months ago, at the Cyberfight Festival when he absolutely turned Tetsuya Endo's lights out with that slap after the no-selling of Endo's offense, and then got the long, stern talking to from Jun Akiyama in the ring. Then a couple nights ago, it's Katsuhiko Nakajima against Kenya Okada, who's subbing for Timothy Thatcher in this tournament. And Nakajima just penalty kicks Kenya Okada's head off. And I've seen people say, well, you know, Okada was shifting around. He was shifting his weight. Nakajima didn't have time to, he didn't have time to adjust. It's basically the same bullshit excuse that hockey fans use when like a guy on their team cross-checks some guy headfirst into the boards. And they're like, well, he turned. He put himself in that position.
Oh.
If you watch it, I don't care if Kenya Okada was right up against the ropes on one side, if he was in the middle of the ring, or if he was up against the ropes on the other side. The height of Katsuhiko Nakajima's leg and foot, when he threw that kick, that penalty kick, that running kick, there was a 0% chance that that was going to hit his chest. Kenya Okada would have had to be El Gigante for that to land on his chest. I have no idea what Nakajima was thinking. And again, I love the guy, but I don't know what you do with him at this point if you're Noah. Like, because God forbid you put him in a match. Let's say Kiyomiya wins the title, and you got all these plans for Kiyomiya to have an 8-month reign, all these things with him. You put him in a 6-man opposite Nakajima on some random spot show, and he's liable to get a broken jaw or get his lights turned out and miss 2 months because of a concussion.
Well, who's his mom? Who's his dad? What made Nakajima, fortunately or unfortunately, is what he's carrying on. And some
he's clearly unhappy. I can't crawl on the guy's head for sure, but where there's enough smoke, there's fire in terms of he's not thrilled about his booking in pro wrestling. I don't know how much of that. I'm not saying the guy's taking it out on wrestlers by breaking their faces, but there's clearly something going on there because, yes, I agree with what you're saying, how he's been brought up in the industry and what type of wrestler he's been. But this year, it's been something else entirely.
But I include the attitude with that. The moodiness and the surliness and, you know, the cocksuredness and the strong-headedness is all comes together. And how he is navigating his career and how he feels. This is... We've seen this a lot of times with a lot of guys, and that's why there's a need to have concern as you have a little alarm bell ringing on what then are you supposed to do with the guy that you have to worry about? And in some ways that can be good because if you can harness that, it creates danger. And the danger that is Nakajima, but if there's, you know,
you want the perception, the problem
the
is
endo
you
thing,
want the perception of danger.
Yes.
You're not getting the perception of danger.
You're getting
you
danger.
You are getting danger. You are having guys getting put on the shelf. Tetsuya Endo, clearly DDT had plans for him to have a big title run.
And
that gets not just ended, but Endo gets completely emasculated in that moment.
And that's, to me, was awful.
Kenya Okada ending the tournament. He's got a nice run in this tournament, finally getting something to sink his teeth into, and he gets his jaw broken. Why?
I don't have the answer to that, and it sucks, and it's bullshit, and maybe it was an accident. But the problem is you lose if it was an accident, if it was, you know, just a thing that happened. You lose any... you know, grace because of what happened with Endo, because you not only screwed up, you screwed up several people's money with that one, and you screwed up several plans, and you pissed off several different people in several sides of companies. So, again, I don't know what the answer for him is. In some ways, he's in the right place with the Ironheads and the Hidekis and everybody that's there, including old heads like Yone and... you know, he's probably in the best place he could possibly be, but somebody, something's got to give here because, as you mentioned, you cannot, nobody, the broken jaws and the KOs and just the general force of some of this stuff, it's like, again, it is what it is, but
well, it can't continue.
People aren't breaking jaws and getting hurt and knocked out at the same rate as other people when they face Nakajima.
Yeah, no, it can't continue. And again, I understand his frustration, particularly if reports about, you know, guys not wanting to lose to him and stuff like that when he's clearly established himself as the top guy in the company. The other thing, though,
but
if you watch
those
this
guys?
Tournament and you,
who are
and
those
watch,
guys?
Excuse, sorry?
Who are those guys? Who are the guys that don't want to lose to him? And
I mean,
what
I
does
think
that
it's
have
very
to
clear
do
when
with...
you look at what guys haven't lost to him or what guys have only gone to time limit draws with him when it was, you know, when
then
the situation
take it out
called
on them.
For them to lose.
Then take it out on them. Take it out on them in the tag match. Take it out on them in the match that's scheduled to go for the draw. Don't take it out on other fucking people. Take it out
Agreed.
On the people that you have the beef with, whose positions that you want, the people that you think are fucking with you. Take it up with them.
100% agreed. The other point that I wanted to make about this show and about what happened with Nakajima and Okada, though, if you watch the tournament closely and you watch this show closely, I think there's a non-zero chance, a non-insignificant chance that this match was booked for Kenny Okada to beat Katsuhiko Nakajima, because you had the one block going down to the whole idea of like a guy playing spoiler or whatever. It was very strange that it would have been odd booking even for Noah standards to have Kaito Kiyomiya versus Satoshi Kojima not be a winner-take-all block match and instead be a block match where it's Kojima basically playing spoiler, which is really what ended up happening. I think there's a legitimate chance that Okada was booked to beat Nakajima, to take Nakajima out of the running, to make Kiyomiya and Kojima the de facto actual final of the block, you know, winner take all. That didn't happen. Instead, Nakajima won. He had 10 points. He also had the tiebreaker over Kojima. So Kojima, regardless of what the English language announcers are saying, Kojima was ostensibly already eliminated at that point. If Kiyomiya won, Kiyomiya would be tied with Nakajima, and Kiyomiya had the head-to-head direct tiebreaker win over him. So I don't know. I just wonder if that plays into it a little bit as well. The mindset that Nakajima is when he got, you know, best case scenario, careless in terms of that kick that he threw. So again, I
but
hate stunningly, even having this conversation.
So stunningly,
because
that makes
I
complete
love the guy.
Sense.
He's like one of the old, during the darkest times of pro wrestling. No, he's like the only guy that made me want to watch those shows. But the situation is what the situation is.
Yeah. Okada would have had 2 points. It would have made him. It would have been a big win. And they, if somebody's fucking with Nakamura, that fits into, you know, logical booking, but also something that's going to drive him completely batty. But there's other ways to do it. And
yes,
leaving a trail, yes, of bodies, it isn't going to, it's just, I don't know.
Well,
it's disappointing
if you
because
want out. I don't know what his contract situation, but if you want out,
get out.
Well, but if what I'm saying is, if you want out, this is not the way to drum up interest and create a bidding war in your services. Is I'm unhappy, I'm going to knock some dudes out. Legit.
Well, like, well, and it's
regardless of how intentional or not it is, clearly two things are happening. Nakajima is unhappy in pro wrestling Noah. And concurrent with that, Nakajima is knocking dudes out left and right, legit. So if you want to go somewhere, I don't think any company is going to look at that and say, well, yeah, I want that in my locker room right now. I just don't, which is a shame, yeah, because he could step into any locker room in the world and be maybe the best or at worst top three in any company right now.
He couldn't in New Japan.
Oh, I think from a performance standpoint, he absolutely would be.
I don't know.
As a wrestler, the only two guys I would put ahead of him right now as a wrestler, if his head is screwed on straight, is Ospreay and Okada.
I don't. Well, see, I think of the Tanahashi. I think of the whole thing, and yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I would kick him off the team, but I don't know if he walks into New Japan that he shines anywhere near as bright as.
I'm just talking ability wise. I'm talking pure bell to bell ability wise. I don't think there's more than two or three guys tops better than him in New Japan right now.
He's complete. I mean, how old is he?
34,
which is so insane 18 that we've been
watching
game,
him
yeah.
since 2005 yeah. wrestling in major promotions, and he's only 34.
And I thought about that thing where I think it was a moonsault where he accidentally broke Danielson's arm, or Christopher Daniels' arm. And I remember doing the PPH, and it's like, you know, should a 16-year-old be in the ring, even with the parents that he had? Now, obviously, as you think about Lucha, you factor in other places, and then
you think about Joshi as well. I mean, we'll talk about Stardom momentarily.
Although even a little bit more of a different story. But I watch like how family, you know, obviously the great example as he's going to be facing him. I could be going crazy about this, but maybe West Coast Pro, he's going to be facing off against Nick Wayne, and it's like. The thought of Nick Wayne and Nakajima, you know what I mean? It's like, I think he tweeted Nick Wayne, or somebody tweeted something about it, and it's like, it's freaky. It's absolutely freaky because of how great Nakajima was in a very short period of time, but he started so damn young. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it absolutely
I gotta look
is.
That so up we'll... now because that's going to drive me nuts. I know I'm not going crazy. Let's see.
I'm sorry, what you cut out for a second?
I think I'm not going crazy here. I know I saw something like that with...
Saw something like what?
I'm Nick Wayne and Nakajima, this West Coast Pro thing or whatever it was. Where the hell was
it? Oh, are you talking about the King of the Indies thing that they're having with Dragon Gate representation, Noah representation, West Coast Pro, some other promotion as well involved?
That's what it must have been then, where he was putting on the dream tweet.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything fully announced. Maybe I missed it. We'll leave the Noah conversation for there. But again, the show this coming Saturday, I find fascinating, and it'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out. That'll be available live on Wrestle Universe with English language commentary from Stuart Fulton and Mark Pickering. From there, definitely want to spend some time before we close out the show talking about Stardom, because we've had angst talking about. Kind of just where New Japan is right now and just kind of the treadmill that they're on. Obviously, you just heard us talk about Nakajima and everything that's going on in Noah, even though it's been a great tournament. I'm excited for the final. We need just some pro wrestling joy to round out the final part of the show. And I would say Stardom, the Stardom, ex-Stardom, Stardom by Stardom, whatever you want to say, pay-per-view of a few weeks ago. And particularly the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix. That is my pro wrestling joy right now. There has been so much great wrestling, most of it, if not all of it, taking place in 15 minutes or less, which certainly separates this from other tournaments in wrestling right now. But, man, so much good stuff. I don't know, how much have you had to how much have you been able to watch over the past few weeks?
Not enough, that's for sure. So I've kind of been in and out on it, so... I'm way too backed up. A couple days backed up for sure. I'm trying to think if it was.
Have
it
you
would
seen,
have been before
you saw
the 27th,
correct?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the pay per view because I don't think we've had a chance to talk about that on the show yet. August 21st, Dolphins Arena, 1,300 fans, solid crowd for what the show was. As far as the major matches, the top three matches were really the most important. Tam Nakano and Natsupoi against Hazuki and Koguma for the Goddesses of Stardom Tag Team Championship went just under 16 minutes, and Natsupoi got the win, pinned Koguma, title change. Tam Nakano finally wins the Goddess of Stardom Championship, Tag Team Championship, wins it with Natsupoi. We've seen that whole story play out. I thought this was very good. It seemed like everybody in the match... There were moments where things didn't go exactly right or things could have gone off the rails, but they never did. I still think if we get a rematch down the line, which I think we will, I think they've got – like this was a very good match. I think they have a great match in them, but still very good stuff. And I'm excited to see what Tam and Natsupoi do sort of at the head of the tag team division, giving Cosmic Angels, like as we talked about before, when Natsupoi joined – like two top stars instead of it just being Tam and everyone else.
Yes, and she fits perfectly in with that group. I mean, everything about it fits. Now, who would be your first choice for a defense against? Would it be Micah and somebody, you know, that's
well, Micah and Himeka would be awesome, and I think that'll happen at some point. It looks like, and again, I don't think anything's been announced, but coming off of the most recent five-star Grand Prix show, which
I did not
had
see
Julia defeat Natsupoi in the tournament. And then we had a pull apart post-match with Natsupoi, Tam, Julia, and Mai Sakurai. I would imagine there's a pretty good chance that will be the first defense or one of the first defenses.
I won't complain about that.
No. I mean, Julia is, for people that have been watching the tournament or if you haven't seen all of it, Julia is wrestling, I would say, at the highest level she's wrestled in over a year. I mean, you go back to she had the neck injury. She had to pull out of the five-star Grand Prix, and she's been fine this year since she came back, but there really haven't been any blow-away Julia matches up until this tournament. And then I think she's been on fire in the five-star Grand Prix. So I'll never complain about having Julia Tam Nakano interaction after their great feud, the hair versus hair match, everything over the past couple of years. The dynamic between Julia and Natsupoi now, with Natsupoi leaving Donna Del Mondo for Cosmic Angels. And Mai Sakurai is another in the long line of people that we talk about all the time with Stardom that came from outside, was really nothing special at all, borderline maybe not all that good. And she, throughout the course of getting the reps, wrestling 2, 3, 4 times a week, being in there with good to great wrestlers every night, she's become a really solid, perfectly competent wrestler that I have no problem being Julia's tag team partner in a tag title match like this.
No. And God, it's just Azumi doesn't have bad matches.
Oh my God. No, she does not.
And like during the Captain's Fall, it's like the six man, it's just, yeah. it's with Hayashi Shida right there. And it's just like, okay, you know, at some point here, you know, and again, there's obviously I'd love to see Julia back in the championship mix, the red and the white belt mix down the line at some point, and obviously Siri and Kamitani and Utami, and it's just they are, you got so many names there, including your Kairis and your Nakanos, and it's like at some point here, you know, we can start working her into this mix.
With Azumi and Starlight Kid, to me, the thing that's going to be most interesting to watch over the next couple of years is if we see either of them win the white belt or particularly the red belt, because they're both clearly good enough for that. They're both clearly over enough for that. I mean, we've seen the polls that have come out that Starlight Kid is whatever. It's one of the top five or top 10 stars in wrestling in all of Japan. Azumi is absolutely should be at the top of anyone's list if it's a credible list of best wrestlers in the world right now, but we don't usually see wrestlers of that size getting the red belt in Stardom, certainly not recently, but either of them would make great champions. I hope that we'll see that at some point. We did have the white belt, I thought, pretty clearly the match of the night on the 21st at this pay-per-view. Saya Kamitani taking on Himeka. This was not the scheduled match. It was going to be Saya Kamitani against Kairi in, you know, what would have been clearly the biggest match of Kamitani's career. And like the thing I thought watching this is, man, it would be so easy on a human level for Saya to have come into this let down, you know, and you know, have a good match, but not a great match. You know, maybe the performance would be a little bit uneven. Her and Himeka went out there and just knocked it out of the park. They had a fantastic match. I was so happy for Himeka to get this spot because she's so good in any position that they put her in, and she deserves more big time singles matches. I thought this was incredible. I'm glad that Kamitani survived that powerbomb counter to the top rope Rana. It was something else. I thought it was a hell of a match and one of Kamitani's best performances. I feel like we say that every time when she has a big singles match as champion, as the white belt champion, she just keeps growing more and more and more into her role as a champion, as a top wrestler. Even throughout the five-star Grand Prix on the most recent show on the 28th, you can make that same argument in her match with Hazuki, someone finally getting a win over Hazuki and stopping her run in the tournament. just awesome stuff, and she's really starting to carry herself with more of that like championship swagger, that star swagger of not like I'm a young person who's still finding my way into as being a champion. Instead, like she seems like a champion, is wrestling like one.
Yes, she's coming into her own more as a champion, and yeah, the whole cloak of it is she's very comfy in, and I will. Give a little, I want to say you're not giving any credit to Megan, but you know what? I will give a little bit more credit to her on this because as much as you say that Kamitani maybe could have come in here and been a little disappointed she didn't get that big match, she didn't have a chance to be disappointed because if she did let down a little bit, she was going to get her head lariated off by Mecca. So it was a different 100% style of match. And it's one of those things that when life gives you lemons, you got to try to make the best lemonade that you can out of it. And unfortunately, this is the one thing with like Stardom where you don't have a whole lot of people on deck as far as when you have your stuff set. WWE is good for this, and people, when you have ridiculously large rosters where you could take somebody that maybe people have forgotten about, that they'll get a pop when they come back, like, unfortunately, you don't have that. So you go with, you know, you go with what you can do to fill the void there, and you have a completely different style match, and I thought it was awesome. And, you know, I was hoping, and again, this is where I would love to see... again, as things change and things get a little more back to normal, I'd like to see how Stardom works with AEW. I'd like to see how they work with, obviously not other promotions because they're not working with other promotions, but how they can work with...
I don't know about that. I mean, if you watch the New Blood shows, I mean, they're working with... I mean, we've seen them before work with Marvelous. Obviously, there's a relationship there with Chigusa and Nagayo.
When's the last time
come in from different promotions on the New Blood shows.
But when's the last time they got a top
prominent
star?
Prominent people featured heavily. Rina Yamashita coming in on the last Korakuen show. So I would disagree a little bit with that. I think if you're talking Tokyo Joshi Pro, they're as isolationist as they come.
Well, I mean, as far as a impactful name that you could have dropped in that title match, you know, and that's where, you know, I would like to see them do that more. It's kind of like that same New Japan thing, but I'm interested to see how they do it here, you know, and how they work with people here because, again, there's a lot of people that I would like to see over there and vice versa.
Are you talking people from American promotions?
Well, even like a Tony Storm, somebody with Stardom blood helps, you know, and obviously, I mean,
we had that in the main event, the very next match with Shuri against Nanai Takahashi for the red belt.
Well, but you know what? That's true. I guess that's true. But I mean, again, that was planned though. But I mean, on short notice, what can you do to actually have some things, you know, that you can call in at any time and have somebody there. I don't know. It's
good. In a best case scenario. And I agree. I guess the issue though is, I mean, everybody else is running their shows too. And, you know, so the likelihood of being able to get, you know, pull in a Takumi Aroha, for example, from,
that's a good
Marvelous
example.
Or, you know, we haven't really seen Chihiro Hashimoto at all in
ever
Stardom as of late, but being able to grab her, I mean, they're doing shows all the time in their home promotions and elsewhere also. So, I mean, this was only, I think, what, 2 days, I think, when Kari came down with COVID and had to be pulled out. So there was not a whole lot of time to find a big outside name. And, I mean, Himeka stepped up, to your point as well, you know, at a pretty damn high level, I thought.
And you know what? I was thinking it was actually a week, and I guess it wasn't. You know, time just gets away from me. I thought it was more than a week, and even then, that's really asking a lot to try to pull out from somebody else. But you did mention a name with Chihiro Hashimoto that I wish she would actually be dropped in different situations more.
Think about the dynamic between Saya Kamitani and Chihiro Hashimoto. That would be incredible.
And there's a couple people in style. Again, it's just she's so talented, and I would like to see her again. It's been such a limited, especially recently too. You know, I would like to see her out there more because at least with her and Sarray, and there were a couple of people, but it's just, I don't know. I'd like to see Mako Satomura go back too, although I don't think that's ever going to happen. And it's going to be interesting to see with Triple H now back when they wanted, you know, global domination from NXT. There's a really good chance that Satomura is going to stay and be a coach there, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see what the tentacles do as far as trying to do something in Japan, because they're always going to try. This is always going to come back up every couple of years or months.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw them try with Noah and Fal when CyberFight and Cyber Agent stepped in and bought Noah. We saw them try that with Stardom before Bushiroad stepped in and bought Stardom. Bought Stardom. There were the talks that maybe they were going to try to acquire Big Japan. That ended up not happening. But yeah, I think particularly with Triple H back in charge, we're going to see those feelers sent out again.
I want Viper and Nikki Storm back.
Yeah. I don't, if bringing in foreigners again to Stardom on a regular basis is going to be people that can't go, I don't want that at all, because the product has evolved so much yeah. that like you're just not going to be able to keep up. You can't have, Mandy Leone winning a title or, beating Hayes. Like I said, you just can't do that right now. You can't do it.
Go, I would love right to see people absolutely. Can go. Yeah, hell yeah.
A couple other things on the Stardom front before we head towards closing out the show. If you watched the New Blood show, I thought one of the most exciting developments on the show and something that felt like it may have been coming for a while. I think maybe we had mentioned it. I had mentioned on the show. I know I had written about it in Three Count Fall at least once, if not a couple of times, to look out for the potential of Tomoka Inaba from Just Tap Out, Taka Michinoku's promotion, potentially joining Stardom as we were starting to see her on all these New Blood shows. She even had the match on a Stardom proper show with Hanan for the future title. She made the save here on this New Blood show. And we saw her, it sure as hell looked like, join the God's Eye stable, led by Shuri with Mirai and Ami Sore. Obviously, that group was smaller than all the other groups in Stardom right now. Just a perfect addition, both in terms of just dynamic, having her in that group, having a very, very talented young wrestler with a martial arts background, wrestling and studying under the learning tree of Shuri. You can't get much better than that. And the other thing that it says is it's just another example of really quietly how incredible of a trainer Taka Michinoku and his whole crew at Just Tap Out and at K-Dojo before that are, and how really, I think, unsung and underappreciated that is when you look at the people they've placed in larger promotions in recent years, whether that be Micah, who is so good right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Hayato Tamura is another one who came out of JTO, had the brief run in 01, and now is killing it in GLATE. There's so many examples of people that have come through that promotion that have been trained there. And then there's the mindset of, it seems pretty clear that Taka is running that promotion and training people, not thinking, well, I'm going to train these guys and they're going to wrestle for me for 15 years. Like, they train people knowing that they're going to go elsewhere. And then that's good. That cycle is going to continue. It's going to draw more and more people to want to come through their doors, and get trained and go on to a bigger promotion. There's another person from Just Tap Out on the Joshi side, Aoi, A-O-I is the spelling. If you've been watching the Stardom New Blood shows, she's awesome. Totally different look. She's got her sort of like street hip hop dance that she does before the match, and she can go in the ring again. On very few matches so far in her career, she had a really good future title match here with Hanan, and I would be surprised if we don't see her similarly start walking that path of being on a bunch of Stardom shows and then eventually getting signed, like we saw with Micah, like it feels like we're seeing with Inaba right now.
I'd love to see this match. She was in a tag match with Minami against Horoyu Matsumoto and Raidi Nagane from Sandai, and I love Matsumoto, and I'd love to see that. I'd love to see the match she had with Chihiro Hashimoto in GLATE on the 20th. Yeah. I mean, that just as a team is like, oh, that's good. I like that, like that on paper.
It's been awesome, too, seeing Hashimoto in GLATE doing the UWF-style matches. Glate, by the way, I always say people need to go out of their way to watch because it's so easy to. Almost every show is either live or a couple days later for free on Glate's YouTube channel. And yeah, that was on the 24th show at Cork, and it was Hashimoto and Mika Iwata against Mochi Miyagi, formerly Andres Miyagi, and Maya Fukuda, who is such a great underdog babyface in these UWF rules matches. But Hashimoto in that environment is just awesome as a killer. It's on a smaller scale, like seeing Vader in UWFI.
She's just so great. Suplexes and just throwing people around. I just need to see her in there with Quiet Storm to see if she can throw around him. And it's always trips me out to see it again. Talk about a long time name. That how long has it been now with Tours of Japan for Quiet Storm?
Well, geez, I mean, I don't even know about just Tours of Japan, but I go back to seeing him on, you know, old CZW tapes with Brian XL and Rick Blade and Jody Fleisch. And he's still kicking it. He's a regular in Glate right now. Also, by the way, on that August 24th Glate show, which is up on YouTube, El Lindemann and Doki for the G-Rex title. Phenomenal match. Doki, it's his second match of the year candidate this year. He had that great match with Taichi at Korakuen earlier this year. Awesome, awesome stuff there. Just a great match. And also the Kento Miyahara, Tetsuya Izuchi match. Kento Miyahara making a rare appearance outside of All Japan, having an awesome match with Izuchi. So good stuff to check out there. The one thing, Mike, I did want to recommend if you're looking for picking and choosing Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix stuff to watch, to sort of get caught up, the Korakuen Hall show from the 27th. Awesome show. And again, another full house, 1,500 fans. They've had the 2 5-star Grand Prix shows they've run there last month were the 2 biggest single promotion show crowds of the pandemic era at Korakuen Hall. A bunch of good stuff on the show. Natsupoi and Suzu Suzuki was really good. Mirai and Amisore was really good. Micah and Utami Hayashishita was great, one of the best matches of the tournament. But Starlight Kid and Julia, one of the best matches I've seen this year. Like, probably top 5 of my favorite matches of the year. They went 13 minutes, and it was just hate-filled intensity the whole way. Wild stuff on the floor. Wild stuff in the ring, a beautiful pinning combination sequence by Julia, ending with her getting the win with the Ganesuke clutch. Just great stuff there. And you know that at some point down the line, I think most likely after Julia wins this tournament and then goes on to beat Shuri for the red belt, I could very easily see this being a huge red belt World of Stardom championship match on a major show down the line, whether it be Stardom or maybe even on a big Stardom New Japan joint show or even at a Wrestle Kingdom.
Starlight Kid is one of those people, and I talked about Izumi before. I am surprised how many people actually, and forget about Japan, because I think that has rolled itself over into the rest of the English-speaking world as well, too, of how many people are really behind her. And I don't see it, I think, in the same way that you do and some other people do as far as being all in. But
I'm more than all in. To me, I would go on record as saying that she has the most physical charisma of any wrestler in the world right now. And I've said it before that to me, she is the heir apparent as far as a masked wrestler
emoting
and a character and who can communicate through that mask. She's the best since Liger.
Wait, Despy's, look, there are some, like, Despy,
her and Desperado,
I think
they're the two. Totally different style, but also in a lot of ways very similar. They're the two, and it's also pretty cool to see how much interaction they've had in the media.
But even with all that, what I just said, too, if she can stand in there with Julie, and you're telling me she stood in there with Julie, I mean, that's essentially,
absolutely.
I don't want to say that's all you need, because, again, you know, look, if you're good in Stardom, you're good, but you know, when you're in there with somebody who is a legitimate main eventer, who people do look at is on a different type of pedestal, you know, again, the more you're in there, the more you're hanging and banging with them and the more you're proving yourself. Again, size is just one of those things, especially with Stardom. I don't think about it. You know what I mean? And it just doesn't matter to me there. As long as you can go, you can go.
100%. I do want to mention, because right along those lines, I have to look up and see what the date was. So I apologize if we don't have it before we go off the air. But if you're picking and choosing matches from the five-star Grand Prix, again, okay, it's from August 14th. Not a pay-per-view, not a Cork and Hall show, just a smaller show on Stardom World. Himeka versus Izumi. 8 minutes. A perfect 8 minute match. A great match. To your point about size, this was the big power wrestler, the absolute world class speed demon smaller wrestler. And they had a match. Like, if at some point Stardom ever gets like an offer match, a slot on Dynamite or on an AEW pay per view, after watching this match, these are the two wrestlers that I would send over. And all I would tell them is, do the exact match you did on August 14th, 2022 here in the United States, and people's minds will be blown. It was just so, so good.
Not Jesse Gabert?
I would say probably not as much that. I'm more interested in the Japan side of the IWGP World Heavyweight title bracket. I get what they're doing. Obviously, the opportunity presented itself to have these matches on the international side, on the Stardom, or excuse me, on the New Japan Royal Quest shows in October. But yeah, I'm definitely more interested in what's going to happen. Okay. Matches to be determined on the Japanese side coming up in the near future.
Well, because it's the units, you know, you're going to get somebody that, you know, at least you're getting out of four of the units, with, I guess, the exception of Cosmic Angels won't have a representation. It'll be Stars and it'll be, you know, everybody else. But I like how on the other side of the bracket, it's like, you're only going to get three women. Like, well, we can do more if you, no, you're going to get three.
Yes, and on the Japanese side, also God's Eye is out. If you watch the drawing of the straws to determine which stables would get representation in the tournament, it was quite amusing, with Shuri being so excited to pick first, and she picks first, and she draws the one of the non-winning straws and just collapses in sadness to the laughter of the crowd. It was very good stuff.
Well, anything else here before we wrap this thing up?
So we could always do 2-3 hours more, but I think the only other thing I'd want to say, and it's been a couple weeks now, but I am so thrilled and so happy for Kazusada Higuchi that he is going to get a proper run and a proper reign as the KOD champion. I think most people were pretty convinced that Tetsuya Endo coming back after, you know, as we talked about, losing the title, having to vacate the title after being knocked out by Katsuhiko Nakajima. I think most people expected, you know, Higuchi, he's going to be a placeholder champion and Endo's going to win the title and go right back on the long reign that was initially planned for him. They had a great match, that being Higuchi and Endo, and Higuchi won. It's been a long, long time coming for him to get this championship and to get a run. And his first title defense coming up in a few weeks will be against Kinosuke Takeshita, which should be incredible before Takeshita most likely makes his return to the United States and Europe.
Another guy. We a great throwback looking, just a great throwback.
Higuchi, yeah, he's just an awesome hoss fighter.
Yeah.
Who can hit a drop kick when he needs to, Stan Hansen style, but just a great heavyweight power fighter that knows how to put a match together and deserves the run that it looks like he's finally going to be getting now. So very excited to see kind of where that goes. And
God, hopefully it leads him to the States, because look, yes. I don't know what his shoot height is, but if you put him in a couple,
he's shorter than you think. That's the weird thing about him, is that,
yeah, he needs like, lifts.
He wrestles bigger than he is. Like, he's not small, but he wrestles bigger than he physically is height-wise.
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, is she? Except he's even, you know, he's much bigger than him. I'm much taller than him, but that doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, if he's 6 feet, okay. But he's one of those people, like, if you gave him, like, if he can work in, like, 2-inch lifts, you come over to the States, and again, obviously there's some people that he'd match up against, but, like, in AEW, he'd look fucking huge. And again, he could, you know, again, because of what he can dish out and the people that he works with, like the Endos and like a plenty of other people like Takeshita that he's had to mix it up with and be around in the past. It's not like he can't work with smaller guys. He's just, he's one of those guys I kind of look at because of the look and everything. And it's like, if you were to take him and drop him in AEW, there's a lot you could actually do there, and I think you could pull that off as this foreign menace here.
100%. I think it's, you know, we saw it with Takeshita, we've seen it with other people, the fact that, you know, AEW, while it's a young audience, it's also, we've talked about it a lot, it's an audience that has a lot of similarities to the old WCW audience, in that if someone comes in who they don't know who they are, but then they put on an incredible match, they get a reaction, like Ultimo Dragon back in the day, or when Dean Malenko first came into WCW. Those guys would have never gotten those reactions in the WWF, and all you have to look at for confirmation is the reactions that their you know, cruiserweight counterparts in, you know, 97 got in, or their light heavyweight counterparts got in the WWF at that time period. But AEW fans, very similar in that, like I said, if you have a blowaway match, they'll buy into it, and Higuchi is definitely capable of that. So let's close this out before we continue to ramble and circle the drain anymore. You and I both have many other projects that we work on beyond just this podcast, which we appreciate you listening to very much. I have, as I mentioned, the Three Count Fall newsletter, which has been a bit in hibernation over the past little while, but I will have a new issue, like I said, coming out tomorrow, talking in more depth, writing in more depth about some of the things we talked about here today. AdamSummers.substack.com is where you can subscribe for free there, and you'll get new issues whenever they come out straight into your inbox. And the other thing is the Wrestling at Random podcast. I mentioned briefly the show that I do with Jeremy Deamer at WrestlingAtRandom.com or wherever you get your podcasts. That show, it's been in a season break where we've been doing episodes still for our Patreon supporters. But as far as the free episodes go, that's been off for a couple months. That comes back 1 week from this Sunday, September 11th. New free episodes coming every week, once again, of Wrestling at Random, where we have tens of thousands of wrestling shows, and that's not an exaggeration, dumped into the randomizer, a spreadsheet which has every single show has a number attached to it. We run a random number generator. Whatever the number hits, that's the show we watch. And it gets pretty random, without a doubt. But we watch those shows. We review them. We do a podcast about it. And that is coming back, like I said, 1 week from Sunday. So if you, wherever you're listening right now, if you're listening on a podcatcher, if you just search Wrestling at Random, you can find that show as well. We've got close to, I believe, around 100 episodes in the back catalog right now if you've never listened before, and new episodes coming each and every week starting September 11th.
I love it. Plus Three Count Fall.
Absolutely, absolutely. Looking forward to getting that back going on a more regular basis, like I said, and got some good stuff in there coming tomorrow.
Now, in all the shows that I do, I can't explain to you why Carousel Shun is part of Jun Akiyama's 30th anniversary match. I can't tell you that. On the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, I can't.
That's why we keep doing the show, because even though we've been doing it for 450 some odd episodes and 16 years now, we still don't have all the answers. That's why we keep coming back. Matches just like that.
Yeah, we don't have the answers, Sway. We don't have the answers there, and I can't answer it here, and I definitely can't answer it for you on the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, but I can tell you about great things that happened in the past on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling TV that airs on the WWE Network and on Peacock, and myself and my co-host Roman Gomez go through those shows, and we offer up some history details that go around it, a little bit of understanding and some context to what was taking place in the world of professional wrestling as we watch that edition of and review that edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And coming up very soon, shows that are not on Peacock that are part of our collection that we're going to be talking about on the road to Greensboro as we lead into Ricky Steamboat and Jay Young Youngblood against Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle. Also, of course, Wrestling Observer Live every single day. Wrestling, you know how to get that one, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. But I have also started being part of a project called The Wrestling News, which you can find at thewrestlingnews.com. It is going to be uploaded on the, it's been uploaded in the afternoon on the YouTube channel of Arcadian Vanguard. But long story short, I grew up listening to news radio. I was heavily influenced by sports radio. And at the top of the hour, you got an update on the news on WTOP. It was from CBS Radio. Depending on where you were in the country, maybe it came from Fox, maybe it came from Mutual back in the day, ABC. Yeah,
we had and still have here WBBM News Radio 780, which yeah. I'm just going to jump in real quick, Mike. You can give the explanation you're going to give, but every single person listening to the Big Audio Nightmare right now should go ahead and subscribe to the podcast that Mike is telling you about that he just started this week. It is phenomenal. It is, Mike will tell you exactly why, but it is great. It is the best way, and it's only two episodes in, but for my money, or a couple episodes in, for my money, it is the best way to stay up to date on wrestling news in the U.S. and around the world without having to put up with a bunch of the BS, the discourse, the drama. If you want to know what's going on, the show Mike is telling about right now is the place to get it.
I really appreciate that, and that's what we were doing. We had a plan. We're not reinventing the wheel, but the way you reinvent the wheel, I think in this case, is just by going back to what always worked. And I'm from the East Coast. I loved news radio. I like top of the hour sports. I like knowing what's going on. And that's what this show is going to give you. It's going to be between 10 and 20 minutes long every day. It will always be in your RSS feed by 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. And maybe a little bit earlier than that. We had originally planned on 7 a.m. Eastern time. But certainly by 8 a.m. is when it's going to be out. And it is going to be between 10 and 20 minutes. It's going to give you all of the professional wrestling news that you need from around the world without conjecture, without a whole bunch of nonsense. Look, there are a lot of great next day TV and pay-per-view review shows, not the least of which is, of course, Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. But those shows tend to be, upwards of an hour long. It may start off with ratings. It may go to this. It may go to that. And that's okay. And it's not just Dave and Brian. It's Voices of Wrestling. They've got shows. Fightful's got shows. There's plenty of people with long, in-depth shows like this one here talking about Japanese wrestling. But what if you just need to know the results on your way to work? What if you just need something concise to know what's going on as you get to those other shows? That's what this show is all about, and it is just 10 to 20 minutes of no bullshit, no nonsense. It's just the wrestling news and presented straight-ahead style like you would be listening to the top-of-the-hour news on your local radio station, just giving you facts, and that is what it's about. And I appreciate what you're saying. It has been a much, much better response than, and I knew it was going to get a good response because I knew there were people like us that we're looking for something like this. And what I found is there's a lot more people that were looking for something like this. And I'm very, very appreciative. If only for 2 days, we have been the number one wrestling podcast. Take that, Kevin Nash. I think you can make it part of your daily routine. I'm scared to set it off right now. But if you say Alexa and say, the wrestling news, it should come up. I know that works for the Big Audio, for the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast. We're working on that, but the same way you would listen to The Daily, or the same way you would listen to a Politico show, or whatever, to start your day off, that's what this is going to be the wrestling version of. And it's a work in progress, but what I can also tell you is, if this thing continues on the trajectory it's on, there's going to be a lot more that comes from it, and hopefully a lot more opportunities and a lot more people involved, because that's what I'm looking to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And from my perspective, I mean, this, Mike, I'm hoping to be involved in this in one way or another with a Japanese wrestling comment or something. But even if I never am, this is exactly the type of show that I think that sort of the wrestling fandom needs.
Adam, let me do
it's
this
It's very
too.
Simple. It's, again, we don't need to belabor it.
No.
It's a short newscast about pro wrestling, and That's it.
Yeah, and the news director, by the way, folks.
That's what's needed. That's what you're bringing, and we, you know, it's top-notch stuff. I'm very excited to see how it will grow, how it will develop, and I think the more people that listen, the better.
The news director is Brian Solomon, who just wrote the Sheik book, who worked for WWE and had a lot to do with their magazines. You may recognize his byline from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And to be able to work with him, to be able to work with Luke Hippelman, who's a great producer, it's been fantastic. We're taking this very, very seriously as well, too. So I say those names not lightly. I say them because they would not be involved if this was not something that we're looking to grow and looking to be dead-ass serious about. So, I appreciate what you're saying. Believe me, things are looking good here. So, again, that's it. Well, again, I promise a better show out of me next time around. It has been a jumbled mess this week for me with everything that's been happening in my life. But you know what? Things are looking kind of sunny. So that's
there. You go. There you go. And the one thing I do want to do before we close out the show is just send out well wishes to Joe Doering. It's a guy that if you listen to this podcast for a long time, we talked about him quite a bit during his run in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Great wrestler. By all reports, a better guy, and unfortunately, he is dealing with some health issues, again, similar to the serious health issues that he dealt with several years ago that took him out of wrestling. So best wishes to him, and hopefully hopefully the same outcome that we saw a few years ago, that will happen again, and he'll be back in the ring sooner rather than later, hopefully.
100 minutes.